grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. First of all, I'd like to welcome everyone here today. I think this is the biggest turnout I've ever seen for an Alateen speaker meeting. And I know that makes Michelle and Carrie feel wonderful. But it's great to have you all here. In Alateen, we learn how to deal with our parents. And here, listening to us, you guys can learn how to deal with us and relate to what we're going through. Okay, I would like for Mark from Parkersburg to read the 12 steps for us.
One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a list of all... Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and made and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and practice these principles in all our affairs.
Sean from Pittsburgh is going to read the 12 traditions.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sean. I'm in the Alateen program, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one authority. A loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or friend. The teenage relatives of alcoholics, when gathered together for mutual aid, may call themselves an Alateen group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other Alateen and Al-Anon family groups or AA as a whole. Five, each Alateen group has but one purpose, to help other teenagers of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, ourselves, and by encouraging and understanding the members of our immediate families. Six, Alateens, being part of the Al-Anon family groups, ought never to endorse, finance, or lend our name to any other outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Although a separate entity, we should always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. Seven, each group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alateen 12 step work should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, our group as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. The Alateen groups have no opinion on outside issues. Hence, our name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. We need guard with special care the anonymity of all AA members. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personalities.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Sean. Okay, I didn't introduce myself. My name's Megan.
Hi, Megan.
Michelle told me I got the privilege of introducing our speakers today because they looked down the list and I had been here the most years, so. Our first speaker tonight I've known for several years now, and you've got to love her personality. She's got so much energy, and I'm sure after you guys hear tonight you'll love her as much as I do. It's Carrie. That's from Sharon.
Hi, my name is Carrie Green. I'm a grateful and loving member of Al-Anon and Alateen. I live in Sharon, Pennsylvania, and I attend Sharon Thursday night Alateen meetings. Well, I guess I'll start by saying that there are a lot of alcoholics in my life. Some decided they were going to stay, and some decided they were going to leave. Some of that by the grace of God. Some are less significant than others. I have uncles and aunts, and I have friends, my grandfather, and my mother. And that list right there is a big deal to me. I can't say that I didn't have a good childhood up until I was 7 years old. When I was seven, my mom decided she was getting a divorce to my stepfather. And in that marriage, there was a three-year-old sister. Her name is Miranda. And I noticed that there was problems because my mother never smoked. I guess she did when I was little, but I never saw her smoke until I was seven. She started to smoke and she started to drink. And from what everybody else in my family says, she was using marijuana and other pills. I had the perfect life. I lived in Florida. We had our own house. I had a swimming pool. I had a three-year-old sister that just loved me to death. And I lived like short driving distance from Disney World. I had it made. They separated after a bunch of verbal fights. It was never anything physical with my stepfather, my first stepfather. He was just very withdrawn from the world. He was in the Vietnam War and he had flashbacks all the time. But my mom started to drink, and I noticed it. I never saw her drunk, but my mother's a workaholic, and it was the first time in my life that I had ever been without my mother. I mean, I always remember having my mother like next to me and through everything I went through, even though she was working all the time. But that began void in my life without my mother, and I began to take care of my sister. My sister was my life. They finally separated, and we moved into an apartment about a half an hour from where we were living before. My mom started to work more, and she met a really nice guy, and he was really good to us and everything, and I had never met anybody that was a drinker besides, you know, just casual. And he drank a lot, but I mean, it was never anything. He was a happy alcoholic. In my belief, he was an alcoholic. He's not here today to say he was or wasn't, but that was my opinion. We stayed where we were, I don't remember how long, but my mom worked all the time, but there was always somebody there to take care of us. She was planning to spend the rest of her life with this man, and he was killed in a motorcycle accident by a drunk driver. And that was my first look at death, and my mom just went crazy from there. She couldn't take it anymore. She couldn't handle being alone. My mother was never the type of person to say, okay, I'm alone and I'm okay. She wasn't that type of person. She's very dependent on other people, but she was a hard worker. We came up here. She called my grandparents in Pennsylvania. And we came up here. They sent them to God, and it was the first time I saw snow, and I thought, wow, this is like crazy. We went up in the middle of winter, and I was wearing shorts, and there was like 2 foot of snow on the ground. And I mean, I shouldn't know something was wrong with them, because I mean, my mom let me wear them.
Yeah.
Well, needless to say, my mom was out of a job. And she got a job as a bartender at a place called Three by the River. There are three bars and restaurants. And they're big time. I didn't mess up like really bad. she got a job at another bar first. It was called Jesus. And she worked there for a while. And we lived with my grandma for maybe 3 months. And my grandma and her started to fight. My mom was like gone, and when she'd come home from work, she'd go out and she'd party with friends because she didn't have a man. And then this was her time. This was her time for meeting with my father and my sister's father, and she was going to have fun. Well, we moved next door to my aunt, in my aunt's house, and we didn't stay there long either. My aunt and my mom started to fight, and so we moved into our own apartment, and that's when I became mom. I took over. My mom was working all the time, and if not, she was out all the time. And my father tried to get back in our lives. And it was really hard for me because I never saw my father. My stepfather was my father. He was my daddy. I loved him. And when we moved up here, he didn't want anything to do with me because he figured that was the time for me to break away from him and see my father. My father's a habitual liar. He can't tell the truth even if it's looking at him in the face. He'd lie about what color the moon was if he had the chance and you'd believe him. He took care of me a lot, though. He took my sister and everything, even though it wasn't his daughter. And we'd go over to his house and we'd watch movies and stuff. Well, then my mom decided she didn't want anything to do with him. She divorced him, and she just didn't want to take him back into her life. So he wasn't around for a while. And to me, that was like the third person that left me in my life. And I mean, I was quite upset about that, but I didn't understand. I just figured, well, he'll be back some other time. In 1985, by the grace of God, it blew her bar away. It just took it, and she didn't have a job. And I was really happy about that because for a while, she was home with me and my sister, and she took care of us the way I thought she was supposed to. The way she had since when I was little. Well, by the grace of her friends, she found a bigger and better bar. And instead of drinking, she got into drugs. And I can't say exactly what she was using, but she was using a lot. And I didn't ever hardly see her drunk, but I mean, she was always acting funny. And when she was on a high, she was nice. I mean, she was really nice. She was like the best person in the world. She wanted to be my best friend because I was mom now. I got myself up, ate breakfast, got my sister up, fed her breakfast, and then got my mom up for work. We moved several times, went through several boyfriends, and went through several mood changes. Then my mom met a man after we had moved into low-income housing that was like her miracle man. She wanted him so much, she fell in love with him the first day she met him, and she put us aside because we weren't important anymore because she found something she wanted and she deserved it because she did for us all those years. He was an alcoholic, a drug addict, he sold, and he was very abusive, both mentally and physically. She stopped seeing him for a while and started seeing somebody else, and I mean, it went back and forth like that for a good while. 2 weeks before their last breakup, he gave her a concussion. And then, after she got over the concussion, she went back to him, and she left 4 days later, and they got married. She took us to our Aunt Terry's, right next door to my grandma's. And she came back a married woman, and she didn't tell us. And she had no reason to, she thought, because she was the mom and she could do anything she wanted. I was angry, and I was hurt. and I hated her for it. She left me and she left my sister for this man that in my mind, I don't believe he loves her. It was really hard when they first got married because I couldn't stand him. And it was okay, I'd get used to him, she said, but by now they were both drinking. And they'd fight, it was just little arguments because he wasn't gonna hit her again, that was an accident. Beating somebody's head up against a car is not an accident, I'm sorry. The cycle of alcoholism started, and it got bad. But I didn't know. I didn't know what it was. I just knew that my mom was acting crazy because of him. He was the cause of this, and if I could just get him out of the house, we would be fine. He would fight with my mom, and my mom would fight with me, and I would fight with my sister. And my sister had nobody. She was alone, and it was really hard for her, and she didn't realize it. She's 12 years old now, or going to be 12, and she's reliving everything that happened now because she's remembering now. And he started abusing her, like pulling her hair and punching her and everything. And no matter how much I hated my mom for marrying this man, nobody was going to make my mother cry. And I got in the middle of it because I'm a big girl, and he was scared. He knew if he hit me, he was going to get hit back. And after several times me getting in the middle, I could raise my voice at first. I could first say, just stop, and it would be okay because he'd be, like, shook up because I said something. Well, then, after a couple of those fights, then it was, I had to like push him away. And that would startle him the first couple times. And then it was just like, I had to throw myself in the middle of it. And I got hit. And the first time I was hit, I told him I'd kill him if he hit me again. And I continued to get into these fights because no matter how much my mom hurt me, she wasn't abusing me like he was abusing her. And that was my mom. And this stranger had come into my house and just like taken over. And it was pretty obvious he was selling because, I mean, there was peanut butter jars in the closet. And I didn't know what they were in there for. They were the tin can kind. So I went in one day and there's like packages of cocaine and all this stuff. And my mom said, "I'll hate you if you ever tell anybody." And I didn't know what to say because, I mean, my mom had never told me she hated me before. And she would, well, that she would hate me. And so I thought it was a big thing and I wasn't going to say anything. Finally, after all the abuse that he had given her, black eyes and stuff that she said that she got from work and the hair pulled out of her head and just things like that, and him punching her in the legs and stuff, and her having big bruises, and she had to make up excuses. She turned on me. And at first, it was just her slapping me in my face and pulling my hair. And I could live with that because I intimidated her more than she intimidated me. It was hard because my mom, that had loved me so many years, left me in my mind for this man. And I thought that all the stuff that he had done to her, at this point, she deserved. She had put my sisters and I through hell. And the whole time, what was funny, well, it wasn't funny, but she thought it was. She's very manipulative, and she'd go to all my relatives and say, "You should see what she is doing. She is this, she is that." And she tries to hit me every time we get into fights so she would justify her own actions. My mom was the happiest person you ever met in your life. You walked up to her now, you'd have no idea that she was an alcoholic or had any problems at all. She's a beautiful woman, but not inside. At one point, she was. After, I'd say, about a year with him, She was drunk, and this was the first time I ever seen her really drunk. And she was fighting with him, and I got in the middle one too many times. And she was supposed to make dinner, and my sister was hungry, and my sister was crying, and I wasn't going to let that happen. So I went downstairs, and I told her she was going to make us dinner. You don't tell an alcoholic to do something. You just don't say, do this now. So she chased me back upstairs, trapped me on the steps, and kicked me until she badly bruised my arm and almost broke it. By that time, I decided I was going to defend myself. I wasn't going to let her hit me anymore. The anger had built up so much, I wanted to kill her. I could not stand the woman that I was living with. It was so-called my mother. She wasn't my mother. She was somebody totally different. She was a monster in my mother's body. And that monster was alcoholism. I went to the hospital after like 2 hours of fighting with them because my arm was hurting really bad. And they were like, no, you're faking this. You're just trying to do this. You're just trying to do that. My sister was screaming. Finally, Dennis took me to the hospital. That's my mom's wonderful savior man. He told the lady at the front desk that it was an accident. We were wrestling, and I hit my arm on a coffee table. And the lady in the X-ray room asked me what happened, and I said, well, first of all, we don't have a coffee table. But I let him lie. I didn't know what to do because I figured, what was I going to say? They were going to believe him. I mean, I had been trying to put myself in homes ever since he came into my life, and it wasn't working. I didn't do anything wrong. I mean, my grades were okay until he came into the picture, and everything just decided to drop. I couldn't concentrate on anything. And I'm sitting in the hospital, and I'm thinking about all this stuff, waiting for the test to come. And this lady walked up to me and said, well, honey, since you did this, your mom should be real nice to you from now on, and she should take you shopping. And I said, okay, lady. Okay. We sat there for about 2 hours for them to wait for the x-rays and stuff and them to tell me all this stuff and to bandage my arm. And the whole time he was just laughing and carrying on with the nurses, and they just thought he was wonderful. Everybody did. It was like they were the perfect couple. They just beat each other up all the time, but their friends could live with that because that was just their little arguments. They were all like that. All my mom's friends. She didn't have any good friends anymore because they all left her from the way she was acting. That night, there's more to the story. I went upstairs and my mom was in bed, and I woke her up, and I was screaming at her, and I said, look what you did to my arm. Why do you hurt me like this? And I told her, you didn't make me dinner. You're taking me to McDonald's. Again, I opened my mouth, and I got slapped again. But this time it was from Dennis, and he pushed me up against the wall. And he told me he was going to kill me. And my mom got out of bed. And, I mean, this is the lady that just, like, was kicking me to death. And she got up, and she said, don't touch my daughter. That's my daughter. That's not your daughter. He had 3 kids of his own, so she always used to throw that in his face. Why don't you take care of your own kids and all this stuff? And so they got into a big fight, and my sister was still there. And I told her she was going to either take me to McDonald's or she was going to make us dinner. And, I mean, this was like 11 o'clock at night. I didn't want to eat. I just wanted to get my anger out. And I had so much built up because of all the stuff that happened. This was the point. I couldn't take it anymore. So I said, I'm leaving. I'm not going to school tomorrow, and I'm leaving. She woke me up for school the next morning, and I just told her to go to hell. I didn't want anything to do with her. I was leaving. She didn't believe me, and she went to work. I called my Aunt Terry, and I said, come get me. So she did, and I told her what happened. And she called social services, and a caseworker told her that I was a disobedient child, and whatever my mom had to do to me was justified because I was just out of control. I had never met this person in my life that was telling her these things, but my mom had beat her to it. My mom had called up these people and told them all these things, and evidently told him what happened after I supposedly, like, pushed her down the steps or something. I stayed at my Aunt Terry's for about 3 months, and my Aunt Terry contacted my father again, and he said he had every intentions of taking me. He was going to do for me what I deserved to be done. He was going to be my dad for the first time in my life. And he made these promises for the 3 months I was living at my Aunt Terry's house. My Aunt Terry has two beautiful kids. They're like the best kids in the world. And she has my Uncle Neil, and he worked all the time, and I was just too much to handle. I mean, I just had so much hatred. And then I missed home, and I missed everything I used to do with my sister. My sister went to live with her father because my mother was proved that she couldn't take care of her anymore. She was proved an unfit mother. So I went right next door to my grandma's house. And do you notice a pattern here? They just pushed me from one house to the next. I went to my grandma and grandpa's house, and this man that is my grandfather is an alcoholic. And he was my grandpa. He was the man. I loved him more than anything in this world. He bought me everything. I said, he came down to Florida, "Grandpa, buy me this. Grandpa, buy me that." I thought he was rich. And he was just going to make everything that I wanted and I needed happen. Well, my grandfather's also a workaholic, and no matter if he was drunk or whatever, he would still go to work on time. Everybody knew he drank, but nobody knew how much. And I was there for about 6 months, and my dad would still tell me, "I'm just going to come and get you as soon as I make living arrangements for you, and I'll do this and I'll do that." And then one day he called my grandma, and he called a social worker and said that if I couldn't find some place to stay, I would just have to go to a home because he couldn't take me. And I called him, and we went through this big thing, and I promised him that was the last time I'd ever talk to him. And my aunt, his sister, would call me and say I was breaking my dad's heart, and how could I do this to him? I had my cousins yelling at me at school, telling me how could I hurt this man that was so good to me and that looked for me when I was in Florida. And I hated them. I hated them for saying it. I hated these people I didn't even know. They were my relatives, and I had no idea who they were. I went to the house. I didn't know what their names were. And I was supposed to automatically love them because they were my relatives. Well, that was the end of my father. And my grandfather, after I thought things couldn't get any worse, my grandfather came to me one day and he said, "I have something to tell you." And my grandfather didn't talk to me. He'd pick on me because he didn't know how to show that he loved me. So he'd pick on me until I cried. And then he'd say, "Oh, but you know I love you," when he was chasing me out of the house because I was running from him. That was the only way he could say it and to buy me things. Well, he sat down and I thought, this is serious. And he said, "I'm leaving your grandma." He said, "And people are going to blame you for it." And I didn't think anything of it. I thought, my relatives are going to blame me for something somebody else did. And I mean, I didn't realize at that time that my mom was blaming me for everything that happened to her. And I mean, everybody in the family knew that. And everybody in the family thought I was the cause of my grandpa leaving my grandma. And he said that he wasn't happy, and that he was making her miserable, and he was just leaving. Well, I got into Alateen right before I moved into the house, so I thought I was doing pretty good. I was going to the meetings and stuff. I have a dear friend of mine named Lonnie that took me to my first meeting, and she's still a good friend. And I scared her mom to death because I had so much hostility and so much anger. I'd get in the car, and I'd be like, "Let's go." And she told me, like, a couple months ago, she was terrified of me. And I didn't know why. I mean, I was wonderful. I didn't do anything. But I thought, okay, I can take this pretty well. I didn't know what was going on. I was just, like, in a daze. Well, my grandmother took it pretty bad, which I expected she would. And nobody even knew that my grandfather had talked to me. Well, several members of my family, blame me, and they were my Aunt Terry told me to get the F out of her house. She didn't want to see me anymore. She was going to punch me in my head and all this stuff. So I left, and my grandma couldn't take care of herself, let alone me. She was a mess. And I didn't know what to do, and she didn't know what to do, so she sent me home. She sent me home to my mom and to Dennis that had supposedly quit drinking. And they had quit drinking, but it was worse than ever because they were dry drunk, and they didn't know what to do with their time. They didn't know what, because they weren't going to AA. My mom was cured. My mom went to 3 Al-Anon meetings, and she was cured. She went to Adult Children and decided she wasn't going to go anymore because my grandma's friends went, and they'd tell her everything she said. We spent a lot of time talking about my anger at Alateen during those times, and I thought, wow, this is the last person I could depend on, and she left me, she sent me home. And I realize now that it wasn't the best thing for me. If I could have went someplace else, that would have been better. But she couldn't take the shakiness in her life at that time with me there because she didn't know what to do with herself. My grandma got into Al-Anon because of her friend Josephine 20 years before she decided to go in. And she went in right before my grandfather left. So, I mean, she had those friends. She made those friends in Al-Anon that she could depend on, and they could help her, and they could get her to every meeting she needed to go to. I went home with them, and things got worse because I just walked in the door. I didn't want to be there, and I was crying. And my mom said, "Why are you crying? You should be happy to be here. I'm your mother." No. I wasn't very happy to be there. I didn't care. Well, my mom had quit where she was working as a bartender and became a waitress. And she had a pretty good job. Thank you. And she was making good tips and stuff. And we were doing okay because my sister wasn't there and it was less money and stuff. And Dennis had a job as a mechanic. And he had his own garage. And I wondered why he was making so much money. And I mean, it was still, I knew he was selling, but I didn't know it was bringing in that much. And he was always like doing this and doing that for my mom. And he was pretty good during this whole thing, and she'd fight with him, and he'd say, "Now hold up, I love you," and I was like, wow. He'd stop drinking, everything is fine. Well, my mom got mad, and my mom got violent because he wouldn't fight with her because she was so used to it, and she beat on me. And these people at Alateen kept telling me, just agree with her. When she says something, just agree with her. Well, you don't sit in front of an alcoholic when they're asking questions, a mad one, and saying, oh, they said there's 101 ways to say oh, and you can say it nice, and you can say it in a way that nothing is going to happen to you, and you're just going to make the best of this situation, you're going to get serenity in your life. And I said, I hate these people, they're getting me beat. So I decided I wasn't going to help them anymore because they weren't helping me. And I had nobody, I had nobody at all to depend on. I had that friend living next door to me in Linda's apartment for 7 years. And she helped me through a lot, and I can't say that I would be here today if it wasn't for her. She's the dearest friend in my life, and her mom was my mom when I didn't have one. Things got worse, and they started drinking again. Dennis was, he would just go out and get drunk and come home because he knew my mom would kill him. He went and then he made excuses to get into a fight with her, and then he went to the bar. So my mom even asked to go to the bar, and they said, "Get up the bar," and she'd be taking him, and he'd call and see if she'd be there. When they found each other, they'd come home and be beating up on each other in a parking lot. The police knew me by my first name, and I had never done anything in my life. They were at my house every week. I know every single one of them, so if I ever get in trouble, I'm in trouble. They just come and say, "Now, folks, this is a loving family. You can do this. You just need to get yourself straightened around." Well, we moved. And my mom got another job. She got a good job at Sawhill. It's like a steel mill. And it was really hard work, so she was never home. And she drank, but she didn't drink that much. She wasn't drunk anymore. She'd go out once in a while, but Dennis was drunk all the time. And my mom's a pill popper. If something goes wrong, she just pops a pill. And she was taking Xanax. And I always knew when she was taking them because she'd say, I'd say, Mom, can I stay at my friend's house? Go ahead. And she wouldn't ask me where I was staying or where I was going. And the next morning, she'd be like, where were you? I'll kill you. And, I mean, it was pretty evident that there was still something wrong. But it was Dennis making her like this. He was the man that did everything to her to make her like this. Well, then Dennis left. They got divorced, and he left, and he came back, and he left, and he came back. Well, then my mom found this new guy, and his name was Steven. And I liked him because he was nothing like Dennis. Well, he could have been, and I still would have liked him because he wasn't Dennis. I can't say it wasn't good when he was there, because my mom was happy, and my mom loved me again. I mean, don't get me wrong, my mom would go to all of her friends and say, this is my baby, I love her, and I'm so proud of her for doing this and doing that. They'd get in the car and she'd say, you disappoint me. You're lazy, you're this, you're that. And I mean, it was just like, okay. But I could have went either way. I still wasn't going to Alateen. I stopped going because I hated those people. And it was difficult for me to grasp the situation that I was not important in my mother's life. She replaced me with alcohol first, she replaced me with Dennis second, and then she replaced me with Steven third. My sister came home on weekends, and she was always in the middle of a fight because it's a 4-hour drive from my house in Sharon to Columbus, Ohio. So whoever she took with her, by the way home, they'd be fighting. And Dennis was always the one that would ride with her, so they'd get back together on the weekends, and Stephen would come back Monday. He wasn't abusive, but he screamed a lot, and he was the type of person that would do anything for my mom. He loved my mom, and he still does. He just doesn't know how to show it. I mean, he'd say, like, when they got into fights, he'd put letters on her car and buy her things and stick them in the car and stuff and steal her keys so she couldn't go anywhere. And one night, my mom threw me out, and she called my grandma and my aunt and said that she was so distraught that I ran away, and I said I was never coming back, and she didn't know where I was. Well, I had a friend that lived one street away, that's like my brother, and she knew where I was because I'd call her every day and say, do you want me to come home? And she'd say, well, if you want to take your punishment, come on. And I wasn't going to go home and like get beat or anything. I didn't do anything. She'd bodily push me out of the house. So she did this about 8 times over a course of about 3 months. And I never saw my sister because it was like before my sister would come home, she'd throw me out. And my anger and my hostility was gone from my sister because I didn't get to see her. I was like her mother. I took care of her, and she knew it. And she wasn't really close to my mom. She was close to me. And it hurt me that I didn't get to see my sister. So I came home, and there was a padlock on the door that my mom called social workers again, and they said to padlock the door so I couldn't get in and get my clothes. And this was probably about the 8th and 9th time that she threw me out. So I decided I was leaving, and I wasn't going to come home. Fine then, forget it. Well, there's a note on the door saying to be home. It was like Monday. Be home on Thursday. I don't care if you come home any other time. Be home on Thursday so you can meet this lady. So, okay. Things are going to be better and all this stuff. So I thought, okay. So I stayed at another friend's house because how it went was I'd go to my friend Jeff's house, and his dad like really liked me, and he wanted to adopt me, and my mom would never let him take me.
So she'd call the police after a week. They'd come get me, and every time they'd say, "We're going to arrest you next time." They kept saying it and saying it and saying it, and finally, the last time they almost did, so I said, "I can't go there again because I can't do this to somebody I care about, because I don't want somebody, this person that I care about, leaving me." So I went to another friend's house. There was three streets down, and my mom didn't know where I was this time. And my grandma told me she really wasn't worried about me because she knew I was always, you know, somewhere around and I'd be okay. Well, I went home that Thursday, and my sister was supposed to come home Friday, so I figured that would be good. And this lady screamed at me. Her name was Amy Myers. She screamed at me, and she was telling me I was an unfit child, and I was just, and I couldn't be controlled, and my mother didn't do anything to me. Why was I acting like this? And she set these rules down and told me if I didn't follow them, there was like two pages, that if I didn't follow them, that I would be sent to a home. And in this girl's home, I would have to do all this manual labor and not get paid, and I'd get all this and all this stuff. And I mean, I had a bunch of friends that went to homes, and they liked it. They'd rather live there than at their dysfunctional homes. And so I knew this lady was lying, but I couldn't take being with my mom, and I had to sit down. This was a rule. Sit down for 15 minutes every night and say, "Mom, I love you. Let's talk." No, I doubt it. She said, "Well, just look at her every once in a while so you get used to it." I've looked at her for all my life, and I don't want to look at her anymore. Well, I never thought that, I mean, I'd watch my friends go through all this stuff with their families and them saying, "I want to kill myself." And I had never thought that even about it. I mean, I'd always thought, "Well, I'll just teach you, I'll die." But I never thought about how I was going to die. My sister came home on Friday, and my mom was really bad. I had to stay in my room for 2 days. And I decided I was going to go down to the cupboard, and I was just going to take a whole bunch of pills, and I wasn't going to wake up, and then I would be fine, because I was going to kill me, or I was going to kill her. And my sister was asleep. She had our bedroom. There was only one bedroom, or one bed in it. And when she came on the weekends, when I wasn't there, she'd sleep in my bed. And if not, she'd sleep with my mom. But since my mom had either one of those nice men there, that she would sleep on the floor next to me. And the air conditioner was on in my room. And I had a single bed. And I took 16 Xanax, some uppers and some downers, and anything I could get my hands on. And I took them at 9:30, and I went to bed. At 10:15, I forget what my mom said, I went into my room, or she went into my room to check on my sister, and I was laying the wrong way on my bed. And she tried to move me, and she couldn't move me. That time, Stephen was there. And they called an ambulance, and they came and got me, and I was, I don't remember 14 hours of my life. I was screaming, I was kicking, I was punching, I was spitting on people, I was calling them names. I don't know what I did, but I know what they told me I did. I gave some lady, a black eye, punched her in the nose, and I had the privilege of meeting this wonderful lady, and I couldn't believe I did these things. And she came in my room, and she had like a bruise. It wasn't really bad. There was like a bruise right here. And I asked her what happened, and she just like looked at me. And I was in the hospital for 5 days. And the whole time my relatives were coming to visit me and stuff, and my dad didn't come or call or anything. And I made a couple of pleas before I did that to my dad, just to take me and to get me out of there. And he didn't want to. He thought that I was fine and I was just making this up. I stayed in the hospital, and this one nurse came in after talking to my mom and started yelling at me, telling me that she lived at her house with her daughter and son, and her daughter said one day to her that her room was clean, so her mom went in and found one of her drawers messed up, so she dumped all the drawers out in the middle of the floor and made her clean her room. And I said, "Boy, doesn't it seem like there's something wrong with you?" And she got mad, and she was screaming at me some more. And I didn't even know this lady, and I couldn't stand her. People from Alateen were calling me, and I wasn't supposed to have any phone calls. But they let me anyway, and I had a note on my door saying that my mother was not permitted in my room. And my mom came one day, because I said she could, which was a big mistake, and said she wanted me to come home, but there was going to be some changes. And I didn't want any more changes in my life, and I told them, I promised them, if I didn't go someplace else, I was going to die, and I was going to be dead this time. Because Dennis had at least 16 guns in the house that were loaded all the time. And if not, there was some in his trunk. They sent me to a place in Youngstown, Ohio. It's called Belmont Pines. And I stayed there for a month, a week, and 3 days. And we had family counseling. And my mom pulled one over on their eyes. She was the perfect mom, and she didn't know why I hated her. And I was this and that and all this once again. And it was really hard for me there because I just walk out of the room. And when you did something like that and you left and didn't tell them why and that you were leaving, you got in trouble and had to sit in your room. And I did that many times. I decided I couldn't live at home anymore, and they called social services because I was in Ohio. They didn't have any jurisdiction to give me to anybody in my family. At this time, my aunt and my grandma weren't talking to my mom. And they were both trying to help me and try to find me someplace to live and try to get me out of there. And my mom still telling me I'm coming home with her. And I learned there, it was like a 24-hour Alateen meeting. I had somebody checking on me every 15 minutes, somebody I could talk to, somebody I could depend on. We did all kinds of like meetings, and we talked a lot about everything, about alcoholism and stuff. And they were all familiar with the programs. If they weren't in them, they had been in them. And they were wonderful people. I spent a lot of time looking at myself, and I ripped up an Alateen book. I tore the pages out, the pages that I liked the most, and I taped them to my walls. And I was, you weren't allowed to have anything taped to your walls. You weren't supposed to, but I'm this person that has to have everything straight and neat and stuff. So I taped them to my walls, and they let me. And I had everything on my walls, and my mom said, "Oh, you planning on staying here?" And I figured I was, because there was another side that you could stay for a year or more, and I just wanted to go over there. And they told me one day, just out of the blue, my insurance was up and I had to go home. So the next day, they called in social workers from Pennsylvania and had them come up and said that since I had to go home, as soon as I went home, we had an appointment in Mercer County, which is a 45-minute drive from Youngstown to Mercer, with the social workers. So I thought, oh, wonderful. Another one who's going to tell me I'm all this, and it's okay for my mom to beat me up. I started talking to people from Alateen and stuff, and I had been planning on going back. And my mom came to get me, and for 45 minutes I didn't say anything, and I loved to talk. And she was just, I mean, I just did not open my mouth once, and she said I was abusing her mentally and physically, and she was calling me names and telling me I was abusing her. I didn't open my mouth. Stephen was there, and Stephen was driving, and he was telling me I was this and I was that, and I had him fooled, and he thought I was a good kid, and he was wrong, and all this. And I didn't say anything, and I started crying, and she asked me why I was crying. I was stupid. Why was I crying? I did this to myself. We got in there, and it was a 20-minute wait to get into this lady's office. And I thought we were going to have this lady Amy again, and I was thinking, oh, joy. But we were waiting, and my mom was giving me these looks saying, talk to me, it's looking bad. Look at me, talk to me. You're going to make these people think something. I didn't care. I didn't care at all. And my mom decided that she was going to get in there, and she was just going to get me in trouble again, and I was going to get put away or something if I couldn't behave. Well, I didn't have Amy. I had another lady. And she said, where do you want to live? And I said, my grandma, she said, go call her. And I said, wow, are you serious? And my mom said, hold up. And she started screaming at this woman. And she screamed and this and that, and they were screaming at each other. I was screaming at her, telling her I hated her. And she said, the lady looked at me and said, one day, I hope you'll be able to sit down with your mom and talk to her. She said, but right now you can't, and I have to get you out of that house. So I went to live with my grandma. My grandma came and got me a year today. It is a year today that I moved in with my grandma. I moved in, and my birthday is Friday. It's July 31st, and my mom called me and asked me what I wanted for my birthday. And I said, you've done plenty for me. I don't need any more. She said, well, I was going to give you $50. I said, that's okay. I don't need it. Last year, I wasn't going to get to come here, and I was really upset about that. And my grandma called up here and pulled some strings, and she got me in, and I came under somebody else's name. But we got here, and I didn't think I was going to be able to get here. And I've been in Alateen ever since, going strong. I was without Alateen for about 6 months, and my life really fell apart. And I didn't think it had anything to do with me. I thought it just had to do with them. But I can't say that I don't love my mother, because I do love my mother, the mom I used to have, not the mom I have now. I see my sister. I have been through a lot in the last year. I had to have a serious operation. I was in a car accident. I went through all this stuff. And my grandma and all my friends were there for me. I have some good friends here that called me every day that I was sick and said, this better not be a sick joke. And it's really been good with my grandma. My grandma is well. She's been in the program for about four years. I've been in over five, not counting the time I was gone. Well, counting the time I was gone. I've grown a lot in Alateen, because now I can accept that just because everything was bad then, it doesn't have to be bad now. And I can sit back and I can say everything's okay with me, because I'm fine. I'm happy with myself, and I always have been. But I wasn't happy with the things that were going on around me. They say you can go one way or the other. You can be like the alcoholic, or you can be your own person. Well, I decided, since I couldn't stand my mom, and it worked out real well, that I was going to be exactly opposite of her. We still have the same stubbornness, and we can fight about everything, but we can talk today. Because of me, I believe she's still with Dennis, and, well, not Steven anymore, but she's still with Dennis off and on, and he's not allowed to be there while my sister's there. So that's good. And my sister's going through all this stuff now, and she really needs a meeting, and her dad doesn't believe in it. She's going to three psychiatrists that keep telling her to go, and she can't go because her dad doesn't want her to. My Alateen group is very supportive of me. I've missed about three meetings this year. I'm a world traveler now. I babysit for people that own those bars that my mom got the job at. And I babysit their kids, and that's a dysfunctional family, but I went to Canada with them I went to Florida with them during the school year. I went to Canada with them recently. I went to New York with my grandmother. I'm here. And when I go back, I'm leaving again. things are good now. And I don't know where I'd be without my grandma. She's a very special person to me, and I love her dearly. We do have our arguments, and my mom doesn't talk to my grandma because of this. And we get these little notes in the mail, you know, your daughter's doing this, and or my daughter's doing that, and, you know, and my aunt doesn't talk to her, and she lives right next door. My grandfather is remarried now to our post woman. and a little irony there. And we see her all over, walking around town and stuff, and it's raining and snowing. We're just driving by. Isn't this nice? I think she's a fine woman. I mean, she's okay as far as lying and stuff goes. But I can let all that go. My grandfather doesn't talk to me. I haven't talked to anybody on my father's side since my grandfather died. And I believe that was because of alcoholism. I haven't wanted to talk to him at all. I have no desire to. I have me, and I have my grandma, and I have the fellowship, and I am thankful for that, and I am done.